Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And how are you? We're getting into the middle part of March, the Ides of March. Well, I'll tell you what, today I'm going to be talking about a whole bunch of things. But I'm going to conclude with who I am going to vote for as a delegate, a drafted delegate. In my state and county convention. And I'm going to tell you why I reached my choice. I think you'll find it surprising. But it's all going to tie into, like, the show, the totality of the show, because there are a number of things, and they've been building for some time, kind of to a crescendo. But there's been a number of things this week which have come to my attention, come to light, occurred, which led me to make my final choice. And I've talked about the various candidates on previous shows, what I think their strengths and weaknesses are, and none of them are perfect. But all of them, no matter what their imperfections, are far more perfect than Hillary, the lying, corrupt, self-centered, greedomaniac, and Bernie Sanders, who, as adorable as he is a socialist and has plans that, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, Bernie. It's not 8, it's not 10. Anyway, what we're going to be talking about to get up to where I tell you what my selection for the Republican nominee for the President of the United States is. And by the way, when I am done with this show, I am literally going down to the county caucus, and it should be a very interesting 3 or 4 hours. I'll report to you next week. I told you a little bit about the precinct caucuses last week here in Wyoming and how fascinating it was. But, you know, it was time for me to make a decision because I'm going to have to cast a vote. And that vote, in its own little way, counts because it's a vote which kind of winds its way through the primary process and becomes, in one way, shape, or form, a vote for the Republican nominee. I don't have to tell you what a key election this is, particularly with somewhere between 3 and 5 Supreme Court justices coming up in the next president's term. All right. Before I get to what my selection was and why I made it, let me give you a little foundation as to what led me in that direction. I want to be talking today about Barry Obama's treasonous acts. I talk about that often, but these are some that were just committed here in the last week, and it will kind of curl your toes when you hear about them. I'm not sure it'll surprise you, but it'll curl your toes. Number two, I'm going to talk about nuclear proliferation and the nuclear threat, or the threat of nuclear attack, that we face every day, and every day it's more pronounced. And I'm going to give you a list of nuclear threats that I don't think you've thought about before. But many of these kind of came to light, or should we say had more light shed on them, just in the last 5 to 7 days. Iran, North Korea. When I get there, I'll give you the details. Then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about how Iran is already spending the billions that they have so far received from Barry and Valerie and Harry and Nancy. Remember, we have a, at best, socialist Islamist as a president who hates America. He is really the kind of the commander-in-chief of ISIS. And we have, as his closest advisor, a Muslim born in Tehran, Iran, one Valerie Jarrett. We have as a CIA director, a gentleman who converted to Islam while in Saudi Arabia several years ago, Mr. Clapper. And we have Muslim Brotherhood folks put in place by this administration, throughout the administration, in the White House, in the security agencies, etc. I've talked about it ad infinitum. And I'm getting ready. I'm just about to put kind of the period at the end of the sentence on my report to you. I promised it for the last month and a half, but I think I'm there, on how the United States government, under this administration, is purposely funding Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood, which is then funneling the money, our tax money, to terrorist organizations around the world. Boy, will that be an eye-opener. But I'm going to have, there's some links on the site that I have for you today, which is great background for that, and will also put you in the know. You'll know, if you follow those links, if you spend a half an hour on them, you will know more about the jihad in this country, the nonviolent jihad, than 99.99% of Americans, unfortunately. And then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some very worrisome things which have happened at the Supreme Court in the last week. What's happening with the Republican establishment in terms of their highfalutin talk about stopping any nominee of Barack Obama, and how that all tied into my decision as to who to support for the Republican nomination, both individually and as a delegate. And then I'm going to give you a list. I sat down and kind of did a list, and it's just a tiny list of all the nasty things that Pillory Hillary has done, been involved in, is currently mired in. And you know, when you put that list together, it is just stunning. It is stunning. I mean, the press focuses on one thing at a time, but when you hear it rattled off in a rat-a-tat-tat cadence, it will just blow your mind. And it's only partial. It's only partial. So, I'm going to talk a little bit about, too, what happened last night with the Trump rally getting shut down in Chicago. Not that that's any great surprise. Who's from Chicago? Raise your hands. Oh, Valerie Jarrett, David Axelrod, and Barry Obama. Huh. Wow. Must be a coincidence. We're going to be talking about that because it brought home to me some really... It kind of brought some stuff home to me. It tied in some dots. And it led, in part, along with many of these other things and other thoughts I'm going to share with you, to who I am going to go for. So, let's get started. And before we start on anything, I want to tell you that I took an hour and a half, whatever it was, and I watched the ceremony for Nancy Reagan. And I watched the dignitaries, James Baker, and her son, and her daughter, and Tom Brokaw kind of give their eulogies, all of which, by the way, were terrific and heartfelt and warm, and you know, it was really nicely done. I know a little bit about Nancy Reagan, but I learned more. But more importantly, it struck me that with the death of Ronald Reagan, the death just 2 weeks ago of Anthony Scalia, certainly one of the, if not the greatest, originalists, i.e., interpretations of the Constitution set, shall we say, set to a parameter of what the founders intended when it was written, the originalist interpretation. which I happen to agree with, by the way, 125%. He was appointed by Ronald Reagan. And you know, with his passing, which I think was not a passing, but was, to be quite honest with you, murder. And if you go back 2 weeks, I believe, and listen to my show, I put together quite a show, if I do say so myself, all modesty aside, probably maybe the best in media as to why all the dots that lead me to that belief, both related specifically to his death, I mean the factual dots on the ground down there in Texas, and the motive. You know, there was motive, there was method, and there was opportunity. The three linchpins of a murder. Anyway, it struck me in watching this pretty moving ceremony and joyous ceremony. I mean, it wasn't sad. That this is the passing of an era. Nancy Reagan's death marked the passing of an era. The last Supreme Court justice appointed by Ronald Reagan died under, at the least, mysterious circumstances just weeks ago. Ronald Reagan's day is a whole different day, where he brought class and dignity to the office. And in the end, in his second election and his re-election, carried 49 of 50 states, unheard of. Instead, today, 40 years plus or minus later, 35 years, we have a president who interviews with bubble bath mamas. We have a first lady who spends close to half a billion of our tax money on private jaunts around the world. Her husband spends a billion. We have, instead of the class of Nancy Reagan and the astute political judgment, we have the self-centered ideologues who currently inhabit the White House. You know, our house, our tenants in the White House, our employees who are our tenants in the White House. And it filled me with a sadness. I mean, nothing ever stays the same. But I really felt for the first time, really, that an era has passed. Irrefutably, irrevocably, irretrievably. And you know, it is up to us. We can't ever restore all of that era, but we can restore what that era is based on, or what it was based on. So that's just a little thought, kind of a foundation for where I'm going to go with this show and where I'm going to wind up with my decision on who to support. First of all, let's talk about Barry's latest treason sack, shall we? Now, Barack Obama knows that he is not going to get any international arms treaty through Congress. He knows he is not going to get any international climate change deal through Congress. So what he has done, while everybody is diverted, is he has signed those treaties anyway. Kind of like I'm going to sign them, you know, try and stop me. And I'll get them ingrained so that they'll be far enough along that you won't be able to do anything about it by the time the courts get around to it. Oh, and by the way, since I have now appointed a third of the appeals court judges, and you guys are probably going to cave and let me swing the majority of the Supreme Court to liberals, there's no court that's going to back you anyway. I mean, it is typical, brilliant Barack Obama. Anyway, you know, we have a system that's supposed to be checks and balances, but when people don't when people don't use the power that is given to them in the Constitution, boy, this gets back to that originalist interpretation, doesn't it? It all ties in. When we have people who don't use their power, the checks and balances are not in place. So what Barry has done on the Small Arms Treaty, this has not been reported virtually anywhere, but you need to know it, since your Second Amendment rights are like in huge jeopardy. He actually sent a delegation down from his administration with, by the way, our taxpayers' checkbook in hand, and they have met in Mexico, of all places, with all the other high mucky-muck globalists who wish to disarm America. Because remember that Americans, an armed American civilians, are not the last bulwark of freedom in America, folks. We're the last bulwark of freedom in the world. That's why the world wants our guns. Do not kid yourself about what's really at play here. Way more, as we all know, than safety, and way more than America. This is a global initiative to disarm you. And Barack Obama, going around Congress's back again, is now actively participating in the implementation of the UN Small Arms Treaty and funding it with the little slush fund that was created in various ways, shapes, and forms, but in the omnibus spending bill that was passed December 15th. Listen to my show last week. I told you quite a bit about it. Number two, knowing full well that the Congress would never back a climate control deal, he signed the climate control accord regardless of his lack of authority to do so. A treaty requires, under the Constitution, which is interpreted by the Supreme Court, do you see how all this ties in? Scalia's death, the whole nine yards. It requires a two-thirds majority vote of the Senate, period. There's no ifs, ands, buts, or ors about this. Nonetheless, he has signed this climate control agreement. And you'll be happy to know that that illegal signing and illegal binding of the United States to a treaty without a vote in the Senate, because the Senate has no cojones, so they didn't call for a vote, which absolutely annoys me to no end, and I'm being mild. We just funded our first $500 million toward the implementation of these climate control measures through this treaty. That's right, your money, my money, illegally, out of the slush fund, out of the omnibus budget, on an illegally signed treaty that has never been voted on by the Senate, and $500 million of our money just went to our $3 billion pledge to this illegal agreement under American law. Now, maybe some people will call this opportunistic, the climate greenies, the globalist greenies, I'm sure we'll call it wonderful, etc. In addition, we now find under oath, in hearings under oath by Loretta Lynch, you know, the woman who has not somehow been able to indict Hillary yet, we find that Loretta Lynch tells Congress that they're actually looking at, you can't make this up, civil and or criminal actions against climate change deniers. In other words, not only is Barry moving full tilt in his last year, as I warned you he would. I told you he would be doing this. And not just this, I mean the overall scope of quote-unquote transforming America, inserting the poison pill so even if it's removed later, there's enough toxin in the body that it'll eventually get you. And by the body, I mean the body corporate of America. Loretta Lynch testified before Congress that the Justice Department is actually looking at potentially bringing civil or criminal actions against people who don't believe or entities that don't believe in climate change. Now, she kind of feathered it over with ExxonMobil and some other big names, but the bottom line is, folks, that just like the left, which these people are the spawn of, shut down Trump's rally tonight in a concerted and premeditated effort, I'll get to that, so too are they moving on all fronts to stifle not only your rights, but your ability to dissent if those rights are attacked. I find this frightening, to say the least. Frightening, to say the least. All right. Our next little item, which led me to my decision as to who to support. You ever hear of a guy by the name of Mohammed Fathi? Well, Mohammed Fathi is a high mucky-muck Iranian diplomat. And here is where your money in the Iran deal that you were lied to about, or should we say after the fact, after telling you that the money would not go to terror, you know, Barry and Valerie and John Kerry, who's so pathetic, he's just pathetic. And then once it was done, Kerry said, well, you know, maybe some of it will go there. I reported it to you on the show. Well, Mohammed Fathi, he kind of giddily unveiled a new scheme. You'll love this, using your money. Paying bounties ranging from $7,000 to $30,000. That's a lot of money over there, folks. To the families of those who commit acts of terrorism. I guess these would be suicide acts of terrorism, since it's to the family. And that is the first inclination of how your money is being used. The second inclination also came this week, by the way. All right. Jack Rosen, the president of the American Jewish Congress, wrote in The Hill this week, quote, none of this can come as a surprise as Iran has increased financial support of both Hamas and Hezbollah, its two best-known proxies. Nor was any of this unanticipated at the time the nuclear agreement was signed. Amen. Amen. Okay. Breaking news, Israel. Big news outlet over in Israel reports, quote, however, with the warming of Iran-Hamas relations and the announcement of the financial aid plan that was announced this week, folks, using your money, it seems that John Kerry's uncomfortable premonitions, this was after it was signed, are coming true. In January, the American Secretary of State admitted that, quote, some of the billions of dollars, unquote, worth of sanctions relief which poured into Iran after the implementation of the P1 plus 5 nuclear deal would probably go to fund terrorist entities. Isn't that terrific? You know, in 1994, this ties into my decision also, Bill Clinton signed a similar deal with North Korea. I mean, the Iran deal is kind of a repeat of the North Korean deal, except it's even worse. And Israel is a closer ally than South Korea, although South Korea is a close ally. But it's the same dynamics at work, right? We have an ally that's threatened by a nuclear power that we allowed to become a nuclear power. South Korea as to North Korea, Israel as to Iran. And, you know, I would say that Hillary was all about that 1994 deal, had her hands in the cookie jar behind it, and she's already come out and said she supports the Iran deal, at the same time saying she supports Israel. You can't do both. So you know, the Iran deal is not really, quote-unquote, an agreement. This is not like a treaty because the Congress wouldn't ratify it. In fact, it's come to light that, and this was reported by Guy Benson with Town Hall, the vote in Tehran was purely symbolic, of course. The Supreme Leader runs the show in that country, and he allowed his so-called Guardian Council to sign off on the accord guaranteeing its adoption. But according to our State Department, that adoption wasn't technically binding under international law. Well, of course, it wasn't ratified by the Senate, never mind international law. The agreement represents political commitments secured by negotiators, we're told, and is not a signed document. Now, you'll kind of like this, folks. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's official website carries a letter from the Supreme Leader to Iranian President Hassan Rouhani, endorsing the deal subject to certain conditions. The nuclear deal, quote, "The nuclear deal will be rendered void if any future sanctions are imposed on Iran by any country or under any pretext, including human rights and alleged support of terrorism." Now, you don't think that all the parties that did that deal knew what the deal was, really? Not what was reported to us beforehand? Okay. And by the way, because it's not a real deal, McConnell and Ryan can stop the money, that portion of the $150 billion which has not yet gone there, they can stop it, but they're not. They're not. And one has to kind of wonder why. Okay, along these lines, by the way, Iran also blasted off two ballistic missile tests. Intelligence people suspect that both missiles were purchased with or using technology given by North Korea. At the same time, North Korea, as you may have heard, is threatening a preemptive nuclear strike because we have military exercises going on. Which gets me into the military or the nuclear threat deal I told you about at the beginning of the show. So, let's look at the nuclear threats that face the United States. Number one, we have the threat of a dirty bomb that is smuggled in and detonated, set off by a terrorist organization. And we know that ISIS stole 80 pounds, let me tell you, that's a lot, of nuclear material from Mosul University when they took Mosul. We also know that ISIS would love to do the dirty deed with a dirty bomb in a major American city or at a major American event. We have the other terrorist organizations that would love to do the same. Then we have, of course, Russia. And we have about 10 months left with Barry in power. And I would say, you know, I think Vladimir Putin is actually calculating as to whether Barry would even launch a counterstrike or just surrender. I mean, I really think that that's probably a strategy map, a strategy dossier that the Kremlin has on its shelf. The what if. And then we have China. And the escalating tensions in the South China Sea, never mind the economic adversity between the two countries. We are economic adversaries. Don't let the globalists feed you any crap that's different. And then we have Iran barreling toward a nuclear weapon, sites that can't be inspected. In fact, we've learned just in the last week that there's even more limitations on these inspections than we were led to believe. Nobody's really ever seen the whole agreement in the side letters anyway. And they just fired off two ballistic missiles, one of which, by the way, had death to Israel or something along those lines. Destruction of Israel is imminent. Painted in Hebrew on the side of the rocket. Yet we're continuing on with the deal. Then we have North Korea. North Korea. You know, they detonated, and you know, all our intelligence people are saying, oh, it wasn't a hydrogen bomb, it wasn't this, it wasn't that. The difference is, a hydrogen bomb is much more powerful than an atomic bomb. And at the same time that we're being told, just like we're told the unemployment rate is 4.9%, when it's really 22, we're being told that that wasn't a hydrogen bomb they set off last month. No. But out of the other side of their mouth, when under oath, these same intelligence guys are saying, however, it was the most powerful blast we've ever recorded, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, bottom line is, maybe it wasn't a big hydrogen bomb. They set off a hydrogen bomb. And North Korea has now threatened a preemptive strike against South Korea and the United States. They've said, they say, who knows, that they've now miniaturized a nuclear weapon that will go on a missile, and they have missiles, which they're cohorting with Iran on. They have missiles that can reach at least the Great Lakes, if not New York. Remember, they're flying in from the west. California, you're definitely toast. So, you know, we have them. Okay? Then, of course, we have, shall we say, a dent in the Iron Dome, shall we? On January 16th, we signed the deal with the Iranians. Pretty scary. Oh, I just found my notes. Yes, on the side of one of the two ballistic missiles that were fired off by Iran today, the exact words were, quote, Israel should be wiped off the earth, unquote, written in Hebrew. That's just terrific. So we have the Iranian threat. Okay, and then we have the internal threat. Because the FBI just busted the head of a Queens, New York metallurgy firm. They had shipped to Iran a half a ton of specialized powder. It's, you know, it's a special kind of cobalt powder. It's necessary for lubrication, etc., in the setting of and delivery of and securing of miniaturized nuclear warheads on ballistic missiles for delivery to a target. By the way, there's 11 other companies that the FBI has busted in the last 6 or 7 months that were also, despite the sanctions, helping Iran further its military and nuclear ambitions. So we have these six huge threats. I'm not even going to Pakistan, the instability in that country, you know, the possible takeover by Pakistan of elements of the Taliban or Taliban disciples, and on and on. We face a growing, and when I say growing, I mean daily growing threat of a nuclear first strike against the United States. From a dirty bomb to a highly sophisticated EMT from Russia, to a less sophisticated but still deadly missile from North Korea, and soon a missile from Iran. And we have a quote-unquote commander-in-chief that quite literally the rest of the world, I betcha, is figuring would do nothing about it. Maybe cheer. He could implement his National Defense Authority Act, have martial law. Who knows? Who knows how that mind thinks? But it is not thinking what's best for America. That you can count on. Along these lines, I have posted under terror an article by the name The Muslim Brotherhood's Plan for America. Bridget Gabriel wrote this article. She's a very outspoken critic of radical Islam. There's been numerous fatwas on her head. She works closely with Claire Lopez, whom I've interviewed on this radio show, and others. at the Strategic Institute, and she is down on the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a terror organization, which, by the way, Barry has refused to designate as a terrorist organization. John Kerry refuses to mention as a terrorist organization. Valerie Jarrett is actually involved with Uma Abedin's parents are high mucky mucks in that organization. She is Hillary Clinton's chief aide and had access to all the, I want to say classified secured materials, but they're really classified unsecured materials in Hillary's server. And you can just see how the whole kind of circle's going. I'm going to quote something from this article. In 2004, federal investigators discovered a Muslim Brotherhood memorandum during a search of a Northern Virginia home. The memorandum, written by Muhammad Akram for the Muslim Brotherhood's Shura Council, described the civilization jihad aimed at North America. It stated, "The Ikhwan must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands at the hands of the believers, so that it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions." I've talked about this white paper before. We're going to go into it in greater detail. She has done a terrific job in putting together a website. Please take a look at the links. You can click on it. The website will bring you up all 29 organizations, which are linked to work in concert with the Muslim Brotherhood. It is a perfect foundation for the show I'm going to do on how American taxpayer money is going to mosques and the Muslim Brotherhood to fund terrorists against ourselves and against Israel and against Western, or as Barry would call them, colonial, nasty colonial interests. Okay. The Muslim Brotherhood, by the way, I've talked about it in general terms. And there's, once again, there's a link here which explains it in great detail, so I'm just going to hit on it briefly. The Muslim Brotherhood was founded in 1928. It is militant. It is pro-Sharia law. It uses both violence and nonviolent type of jihad strategies to achieve its ultimate goal, which is restoring the Muslim caliphate and the glory of the Islamic empire. So, you know, the dozens of organizations that they are linked with around the globe and in the United States include Al-Qaeda and Hamas. Okay, if you remember, Barry and Valerie ousted Mubarak, our ally in Egypt, the largest and most stable of the Mideast countries, and the real keeper of the peace between Arabs and Israelis. And backed a Muslim Brotherhood government, which was subsequently thrown out by the Egyptian people. And to this day, they have not given Egypt aid because they consider the overthrow of the Muslim government by 36 million, let me underline that, 36 million, this is more than half the population of Egypt, in the street demanding that the Muslim Brotherhood go, to be undemocratic. You know, this most democratic of presidents that we have. Listen to the will of the people. The only people that weren't in the streets when they threw out the Muslim Brotherhood buddies of Barack and Barry, of Barack, Barry, and Valerie, were people too old to walk and people too young to crawl. Everybody else was out there. Anyway, please look at those links. You will find it fascinating. And you will know more. It's a great foundation for what I got coming next in the next couple shows. But you will know more about how this insidious web bent on the destruction of America, Israel, Western civilization, and the implementation of a worldwide caliphate, how it is operating in our country. Aided and abetted by treasonous figures, unfortunately now, in all branches of our government, but particularly the administrative branch. That was a fourth or fifth thing I researched this week, which led me to my decision.